still rocking after all these years.
This is the story of my rock and roll butler.
This is it, the show that started it all. Often imitated, but never equal. From San Francisco, USA, online since 2004. Right. It's the one and only rock and roll geek show. With the original rock and roll geek, Michael Butler.
Welcome to the Rock and Roll Geek Show. My name is Michael Butler. Thanks a lot for joining me. I really appreciate it. Today is Wednesday, March 18th, 2020, when I'm recording this episode. And I just got off the phone with Andy Sheeranoff. I'll need a little backstory here. If you don't know who Andy Sheeranoff is, Andy Sheeranoff was the bass player and songwriter of one of the greatest punk rock bands of all time. And true punk rock pioneers, the Dictators. As you probably know, or maybe you don't know, I don't know, but I've been helping Handsome Dick Manitoba with his podcast, which is, to me, is a great podcast, which is called You Don't Know Dick. And Andy Sheeranoff sent me a message because he heard the podcast I did with Richard, or Handsome Dick Manitoba, and wanted to come on and rebut, make some rebuttals of things that Richard said on the podcast. And out of respect to Richard Manitoba, who I have a ton of respect for, I needed to clear it with him. And we went back and forth a lot of times and took a lot of negotiating and this and that, and which I didn't really want to do any negotiating because I don't want this to be trash podcasting and he said, she said, and bad-mouthing each other and all that stuff. I want to get the Dictators back together. As a Dictators fan, that's what I wanted. So that's why I wanted to get Andy back on the show. Because Andy approached me and said, I think I deserve equal time to rebut things that Manitoba said on your podcast. So out of respect to Richard, because I didn't want to do this without his knowledge, I had to go back and forth, and we negotiated and this and that. And eventually, Richard gave in and said, okay, you can have him on, and but I'm going to probably want to come on and rebut. So I just got off the phone with Andy Sheeranoff, and we talked for about an hour and a half, and I think it is pretty compelling. At least I think so. Again, I'm going to say Andy Sheeranoff, one of the greatest songwriters in punk rock, which I told him over and over again that Andy Sheeranoff and Didi Ramone, probably the two greatest punk rock songwriters of all time. And I'll also say this, Handsome Dick Manitoba in my top five frontmen of all time. I don't think there's any dispute. The guy's a fucking great frontman. Fantastic frontman and a great singer. He's got a great voice. And I think Richard Manitoba is a one of the most real and, how do I put this, real and coolest guys I've ever met. I would have him at my house anytime. I love the guy. I haven't even met him in person. I just love the guy. By talking to him, and when I do talk to him, the guy's a great guy, and I love the guy. And I don't want to do anything to disparage Richard Manitoba, Handsome Dick Manitoba. And I also have tons of respect for Andy Sheeranoff as a songwriter and a bass player. So that's what you're getting tonight, friends. Andy Sheeranoff comes on the Rock and Roll Geek Show, and we talk for about an hour and a half. He gives his stories about things, and we talk music. I take some listener questions, and hope you enjoy it. So enough of my yapping. Here is me talking to Andy Sheeranoff. Thank you for listening, friends. I hope you enjoy it. And once again, please keep the donations coming. I hope you're safe during this bullshit we're going through in the country right now, in the world right now. Hope you're safe, and I hope you're healthy. And I hope you enjoyed this interview with Andy Sheeranoff. Andy Sheeranoff, thank you for coming on the Rock and Roll Geek Show. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
You know, this is the second time you've been on my show. I talked to you a long, long time ago.
Oh, you got to remind me because I.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It was probably a crappy interview anyway. I probably kissed your ass the whole time. So, how are you locked in quarantine right now?
I am.
Good, good.
I am. Good. I'm in the age group where you gotta watch out. My wife is younger than me. She doesn't like me to leave the house. But I live in a rural community in upstate New York. Uh-huh. So I went out today. I mean, there aren't a lot of people around me. So I think the odds of me getting the virus are slim. But there were people supposed to come up from New York like on tomorrow. Hey, let's cancel this meeting.
Yeah, well, hopefully this shit blows over soon.
Yes. It's very upsetting to a lot of people, and unfortunately, a lot of people are going to die. It's not good.
Yeah, hopefully nobody we know will die. Let me get the ass kissing out of the way, and then we'll get to the dirty, nitty gritty stuff. Okay. First of all, I think you're one of the greatest songwriters in the world, as you probably think you are as well. You probably know you are.
I don't. No, I don't. Not at all. Matter of fact, that not only don't I know that, don't I think that, I know I'm not.
Well.
Listen, I've worked with some of the greatest songwriters in the world. I'm a craftsman.
Okay, well, you
know, I've worked with great artists. I'm a good craftsman.
I will also say that Manitoba's Wild Kingdom and You album is one of my favorite albums of all time.
Thank you.
I probably told you before. Now, please tell me something nice about Richard Manitoba, because I love... Hold on, wait, back up. I think... tell me something nice about Richard Manitoba.
He's a good cook.
Do you agree that Richard Manitoba is one of the greatest frontmen of all time?
I think he's actually very skilled as a frontman, actually. I'll be perfectly honest. I think he has a skill that very, very few people have to get on stage and get attention. That is something, I don't think you can work on that. I think you're born with that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now I can go into that deeper, but I'll tell you what, you want good vibes, we'll leave it at that.
Tell me what your favorite memory of a gig with Handsome Dick Manitoba.
Oh gee, let me see.
I know there had to be lots of good memories because
we had a lot of fun times on stage.
Saw you guys twice at the Bottom of the Hill in San Francisco, and
great show. Those were good shows. Those are good memories. Yes, San Francisco was always good for the Dictators. Even our first time playing outside New York was at Mabuhay Gardens in 1976 or whatever.
I was not in San Francisco at that time, but yes. Okay, so when is the reunion?
Dictator reunion
with the Handsome Dick Manitoba.
Oh, that's not going to happen. Absolutely will not happen.
Why not?
Well, we had a big trademark dispute, which he lost. And I've never spoken about it. So you got a scoop here, Michael.
Okay. We'll go into detail about the trademark dispute. I'm guessing, tell me if I'm wrong. What I heard was, you said you guys cannot play because Ross the Boss and Richard wanted to go out on tour of Europe, and you guys said I don't want to do it, and you guys cannot do it under the name Dictators. Am I right so far?
Absolute, complete, 100% bullshit.
Okay, all right. Well, to be correct,
here's the story. I'm going to tell you the story. In 2008. We played in Spain, came back. I couldn't deal with Richard. It's not even like a personality. It's like, it was like musically, it's not working.
What was not working about it?
I have 190 credits. I told you to look at my discography.
At your discography. I already know your discography because I'm a huge Dictators fan.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, I'm not a big hit maker. I'm a working musician.
Right, but the Dictators had
I work with a lot of musicians, a lot, over the past 30, 40 years.
Well,
I don't have to work with a guy who can't deliver the goods to me and who's not interested in delivering the goods and who's going to cause a problem for me. I'll go somewhere else.
As a fan of the Dictators, here's what the magic of the Dictators was to a Dictators fan. your great songs. Everybody knows you write the great songs. Everybody knew all the songs. Everybody, all the Dictators fans know that all the great songs by the Dictators and Manitoba's Wild Kingdom, because you guys also did Wild Kingdom tunes on those Dictator shows. Everybody knows that the greatness of the Dictators was Ross the Boss's rocking guitar playing, Andy Chernoff's great songs, and Handsome Dick's vocals. You guys, you and Handsome Dick are like Roger Daltrey and Pete Townsend. Roger Daltrey and Pete Townsend can't stand each other, from what I hear. But they make magic on stage together.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you comparing Manitoba to Daltrey and me to Pete Townsend?
Yes, I am.
Well, I wouldn't do that.
Why?
I wouldn't do that. Look, I'm going to tell my story. Okay. I came on here. I have two things I want to tell. And we can talk. I just want 10 minutes of your time. Then we can talk about music or whatever you want to talk about. I'd rather talk about my career, what I'm planning for the future, things I'm doing now. But you had a guy on your show who basically fed you a line of bullshit. And I'm going to tell you the story.
Okay, go ahead.
And I appreciate the opportunity to tell the story. But back in 2008, we came back from Spain, and God, you know, I just couldn't. I had a hard time dealing with him. I have other work.
And what was so hard about dealing? What specifically happened that you couldn't deal with him?
You know, it's meaningless. It's really, I mean, the details. The fact is, me and the other guys in the band were a little irritated. Okay, and the point is, it's not even the personality aspects. It's the music. I keep telling you, it's the music. I don't like working with him on a musical basis.
You don't think he?
I'm a working musician.
You don't think he delivers your songs the way they should be delivered?
Hey, he did. You know, and now it's time to move on for me.
Okay, well then,
and I have other people I can work with, so I'll work with who I want to work with.
But aren't you doing something now and calling it the Dictators?
Well, you know, you're not letting me tell my story.
Okay.
And I'll talk about that. I'd be happy to talk about that. Sure. Can I tell my story?
Absolutely.
Okay. So I decided I needed a break. This is something the Dictators have been doing for a long time. They play, take a break for a few years. They play, take a break for a few years. It was time for a break. And in that time, we did get offered a tour from Spain. I didn't want to do it. And eventually we got offered a show in New York playing for Norton Records 25th anniversary. I said, I'll do it.
Saw the video. It was great.
Okay. I played. The Dictators were offered the headline spot at that Norton show. Richard didn't want to do it. Fine. I don't care. Whatever reason he has, it's cool. About 2 weeks after he decided not to do the show, which this belies the whole line that I don't want to play. Because he turned down the last show offered to all of us. So
did he give a reason for turning it down?
He wanted more than one show. I think he wanted, I don't remember exactly, but you know, we were offered only one show. I was not interested in booking more shows. If he wanted to book more shows, he could have booked more shows. You know, I agreed to, we were offered one show. I said, let's do it. He didn't want to do it. Okay?
Okay, but he did it.
No, he didn't do it.
He did not play that Norton show?
No. He turned it down.
Okay,
then he said he didn't want to do it.
That's not the show that I saw then.
No, it's the show you saw. It was the 25th anniversary at the Bell House in Brooklyn. 25th anniversary in Norton Records.
And Richard was not on stage at that show?
Absolutely was not.
Okay, then I saw a different show. It was an outdoor show, and
No. This is an indoor show at a big club, 800 seat club, which 800 seats for us in New York is a very good show because we're playing the Bowery Ballroom, which is 500 plus.
Uh-huh.
You know, so this is a good show for us. It's going to be our audience. It was in New York.
What year was this?
I don't know, 2010, 2011.
All right, 10 years ago.
I don't know. You can look. you know, everybody can look it up. You keep distracting me from telling my story.
I'm sorry. It's the way I am.
This is why I'm here.
It is a fault of mine. I apologize. I get no problem. Tangents.
But we can talk about everything else. Just let me tell my story.
Okay, go ahead.
He turned down the show. Fine. About a week or two after this, he goes to me. He says, Andy, I want to talk to you. I want to meet you. We met in Tompkins Square Park. Tells me, I want to play. Is it okay if I do your songs? I say, Richard, fine, do it. Now, I know from the experience with other guys and Dictators, when Scott went off to play with the Del Lords, he got better as a guitar player. He became a great songwriter. Ross went off to Manowar. He became a rock star. Here's Richard. He's never had his own band. He's saying, hey, I want to form a band. I don't want to play your music. Well, you know, that's actually, thank you. You want to play my music and in your own band? Great. Me thinking he's going to start a band, write some songs, do some of my songs, go on his own career. But of course, what he does is just basically play the same Dictator set we've been playing for the past, you know, 5 years.
And this band was called what?
Manitoba.
Okay, got it.
Plays for about a year or so. And they can't really, not really making the money the Dictators used to make or drawing crowds. So eventually a promoter comes along and says, hey, I'll pay you 10 times the money or whatever he was offering if you call yourself the Dictators.
Right.
So Richard saw dollar signs. He went off, trademarks the name the Dictators in his own name. Not my name and everybody else's name. He traded Dictators NYC, and I can't trademark the Dictators if he's trademarked Dictators NYC. So he broke our handshake agreement. We shook hands in Tompkins Square Park. You can play my songs. Don't call them the Dictators. Go have a great time. Okay. And do whatever, you know, record them, make a video, anything you want. He broke the agreement. He trademarks the name in his own name. And we have a corporation, Dictators Inc. You know what the asset of the corporation is?
How much?
The Dictators trademark.
Okay, can I interrupt?
Okay, go ahead.
Wasn't Ross the Boss also in Dictators NYC?
He was.
Why were
you? But he didn't trademark the name. Richard trademarked the name. So, yeah, all right, you got to let me, you know, no. Now you have to let me continue. Okay. You have to let me continue because there's more to this. So he trademarked the name, and he's out there playing as Dictators, small letters, NYC, or at least half the shows. There are very lazy promoters out there. It's called the Dictators. The picture in the ad is me and Scott and old pictures of the Dictators.
All right.
When they got playing music on, you know, to promote the show on Facebook or whatever, it's my song, me singing half the songs. So, not only that, they're selling merch with my picture on it. He's using the Dictators logo. We got a corporation that supposedly owns this stuff, but he's put it all in his own name. So I don't know what to do, you know. But my cousin marries this woman, we're talking about, oh, I'm a lawyer. Oh, really? What kind of lawyer are you? I'm a trademark lawyer. Trademark lawyer? What's a trademark lawyer? Tell me what she does. I go, well, maybe you can help me. So she eventually had a kid and dropped out, but her boss was helping me. He says, Andy, don't go to court. Work this out. Work this out without going to court. Just try to work out person to person. And it was me and Scott. And matter of fact, Scott was the guy talking to Richard, not me, because I was talking to him. Scott gets him. He's coming. Yeah, let me go back one step. We had two goals. We wanted the trademark in all four of our names. And we wanted a differentiation between the band Richard was playing and the Dictators.
Okay.
We we thought, hey, call it Manitoba's Dictators, do something just so people aren't confusing what you're doing with the Dictators. I don't want to stop them from playing. I don't stop anybody from playing music. I'm just standing up for my rights. I mean, if you had a business with somebody, a corporation with somebody, and they trademarked the name of the corporation in their name, what would you do?
Understood, but why are you mad at Richard and not Ross?
Well, I'm not saying I was. I was mad at Ross.
Okay.
I'm not saying, did I say I wasn't mad at Ross? But Ross did not trademark the name. Well, as a matter of fact, I spoke to Ross. He said, yeah, if you put in all four names, I'm good. Richard was preventing it going into all four names.
Well, was Richard taking more money, or did he just handle the legal spot?
No. He owns the trademark.
In Dictators NYC. But was there more money involved in owning that trademark, or did he did it because Ross didn't feel like doing it?
I can't trademark the name of the Dictators if somebody has trademarked Dictators NYC.
Okay. And did you go to Richard and talk to him about that?
We tried, sure, numerous times, absolutely.
And what happened when you talked to him?
He didn't want to cut a deal.
We
wanted all the names on the trademark.
Uh-huh.
And he would say, yes, no. At one point, he says, okay, we sent him a contract. He doesn't sign the contract because he realizes he's losing control of the trademark. That was the point where my lawyer called his lawyer and... hard time getting control of this guy, but the guy wasn't a music lawyer. He wasn't a trademark lawyer. I mean, this is how Richard does his stuff. He doesn't hire a real lawyer. He hires a friend that doesn't pay to be his lawyer. So they talk, and okay, the word goes around. I even saw the email. We got to change the name. Great. And we're working on language, to putting all the name in the trademark in all four names, a corporate agreement for Dictators Incorporated, so this doesn't happen again because we didn't have a corporate agreement. You know, part of it is a bit of we didn't get everything down on paper. You know, Richard saw that and took advantage of it. So, you know, he's playing. He says he's going to change the name. A year doesn't change the name. It's getting ridiculous. Finally, he changes the name to Manitoba NYC, and of course, they do a tour that's a disaster. Nobody goes to see them, and the band quits. You can talk now. If you got questions, I'll answer them.
Yeah.
And then I got more to say.
Okay.
Right. I'm going to tell you why me, Ross, and Scott kicked Richard out of the corporation and out of the band, and why we will never work with him again.
Okay.
But if you have questions, go ahead.
Yeah. So why are you not mad? Why are you playing with Ross now? Or you are playing with Ross now, right?
I'm not playing with
him. Or you're recording with Ross?
We're recording, yeah.
Why Ross and not Richard? Why are you not mad at Ross?
I am mad at Ross.
But you're still playing with him.
You're repeating yourself, Michael. I said, I'm mad at Ross.
But you still play with Ross and not Richard.
Well, me and Ross started the band. And I think this is something that I want to do now. I think we got to do a final thing for the legacy of the band.
Let me ask you this. What all the fighting over the trademark, the name Dictators, and the corporation, what do you think the corporation's worth monetarily wise? How much money?
Not that much.
Exactly. That's kind of my point. All this fighting over something that's really not.
But it's but Michael. These are my songs. I wrote all the songs.
Right, understood.
I produced, after the first three records, we used all the records. There is money. As a matter of fact, wait, excuse me. Did I say there was no money? I'm wrong. There is money. There's a lot of money.
A lot.
I'm going to go to the second part of the story now.
A lot of money.
Michael,
okay.
You got to sit back and relax. All right. And now you're going to understand why there's a problem.
I'm going to call somebody in here to put their hand over my mouth so I can shut the fuck up. Okay.
Okay, you would think after the band quits on him, I'm going to tell you a little interesting story. I knew 3 or 4 months before the band quit, they were going to quit. They couldn't deal with Richard. They could not deal with him being in the band with
him. All right, you're saying the Dictators NYC, they quit him.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't.
Before
I don't,
that final tour, when they were still Dictators NYC, they were preparing to quit.
So they didn't actually go up to him and officially quit. They, according to you,
after the Manitoba NYC disaster tour, that's when they told him. They didn't want to tell him earlier. I don't know why.
But they did tour after that as Dictators NYC.
No.
I saw him like 2 years ago as Dictators NYC in San Francisco.
Yes, but before the final tour, everybody had decided they wanted to leave the band. All four guys.
But they didn't tell Richard.
No.
Well, that's not very nice.
Well, that's, you know, Richard was an asshole. That's why.
Well, that's kind of, don't you think that that's kind of Richard's charm? He wears his heart on his sleeve, and he kind of comes off as an asshole. But in deep down, Richard is got a great heart. Don't you agree?
Absolutely not, and I'll tell you why. After the band, Richard lost a trademark battle, and Stephen fired him from Sirius Radio.
Right.
And after Stephen closed the bar on him, didn't tell him. And after his wife left him, and he tried other bands, he never had a band, because no musicians will work with him. There was a big chunk of money. You would think he might be humble. You might think he would go, oh, I'm going to sit back and I'm going to try to do the right thing now. We had a big chunk of money, royalties, waiting for us at Sound Exchange. You know what Sound Exchange is?
Uh-huh, yes.
For people who don't know, it's a performing rights society formed by Congress, an act of Congress back in 2001 or whatever, the Digital Millennium Act, to divide up royalties from the internet, which was still a new thing. And Sound Exchange collects the money and gives it out to billions of dollars every year to hundreds of thousands of artists. We had a big chunk of money. We couldn't get it. Rich had to hold on it. He had to hold on it?
Yeah, tell me.
He wanted a piece of our royalties.
How did it shake down. How did he have the
shaking
hold
us
on
down?
It? How did he have the hold on it?
Because to give out the royalties, they have to get permission from everybody in the band that they agree on who planned it. This is the thing. Sound Exchange pays 50% to the owner or the master and 50% to the musicians who played on the record. So it's one guy on the record, that one guy gets all the money.
Right.
It's five guys on the record, five guys get the money.
Got it.
If it's three guys, three guys get the money.
Okay.
Richard is not on a lot of Dictators record songs, a lot of tracks. As a matter of fact.
Yeah, he's not on a lot of those first album, he's not on a lot of those songs.
Michael, we're in the age of data. Go to Spotify, look up most played Dictator songs, and the most played Dictator song is Master Race Rock off of Go Crazy. No.
Oh, that was that on the second album.
It's on the first album, but it was our demo, our first recording, which on the record, Every Day is Saturday. That is the most played song on Spotify. The second most played song, he's not on that song at all. Second most played song is Stay With Me. He's on that song. He deserves royalties. Third most played song is California Sun from Every Day is Saturday. He's not on that song. Fourth most played song is Cars and Girls off of Go Girl Crazy. He's not on that song. He doesn't get paid for songs he's not on. But he decided Sound Exchange should change the rules so he gets paid. And we're going to give up a piece of our royalties so he feels like he's getting his, I don't know, because he wants to rip us off. That's why.
Well, how does he have a hold on it? I mean, doesn't
Sound because Sound Exchange will not give out the royalties till everybody agrees who played on what song. I provided Sound Exchange a list of every song and who played on it, and all the drummers, all the different musicians who were members of the band. It was approved by Ross and Scott, Richard would not approve it.
So did you eventually get it worked out? Did everybody eventually get paid, or the money just never
got? Well, let me tell you the story. It was 3 years. He held it for 3 fucking years. Sound Shane says, let's get a mediator. And he refused the mediator.
Now, did you guys talk through lawyers, or did you talk as friends?
No, it's through people at Sound Exchange. I have letters. I have emails from I have an email from this woman at Sound Exchange who was trying to get this thing. Their job is to get the money out to the artist. She was honest constantly. And she's going, I'm tearing my hair out dealing with Richard.
Well, couldn't you guys, what stopped you guys from getting together at a bar and having a beer or whatever, or a Coca-Cola, and just talking as friends?
Because he wanted a piece of our money.
Did you explain to Richard, hey, here's how it works, that you didn't sing on this? How much more of the money would it have been if you had just gave him part of the money for those songs? How much?
Hey, what you're telling me how I should collect my royalties?
No, I'm not telling you. I'm asking you a question.
Michael, stop. This is forever.
Okay.
This is royalties forever for my kids, my grandchildren, for my great grandchildren.
So did you eventually get paid?
Well, let me tell you the story, Michael. You keep interrupting.
Well, I'm sorry, I'm an asshole, but I'm trying. I have questions,
Michael,
as these things come along.
Kidding, yeah. Mike, I'm kidding.
I know, I got it.
I have not told anybody this story to in public. My friends know it. The dictators know it. Everybody knows it except the people outside my circle. So they're trying. Get Richard. They're explaining it to him. He doesn't care. I want the money evenly split because I'm Richard Manitoba. And Sound Exchange and their stupid laws passed by Congress and the billions of dollars and hundreds of thousands of artists they give money to, I'm Richard Manitoba and I'm special. That's his attitude.
But that's not what he said.
That's his attitude. They told him how to give out money. He didn't care. 2 years. They can't get him to do anything. Will you take a mediator? Please, let's get a mediator. We agree to a mediator. Richard does not. Finally, this woman gets this Richard to agree to a mediator. I'm telling you, this is all going over 3 fucking years. This big chunk of money. Finally, the mediator starts talking to him. The mediator is hard for 15 hours. The guy spent like 50 hours talking to Richard. And he couldn't get him to agree. Finally, he tried some approach. That worked. He calls me up, and he's so proud of himself.
What was the approach?
But, I don't know. He told him, hey, this is money that's going to go to your kid, but don't forget, Richard hasn't had a job in a long time. He needed the money.
Of course.
So he wanted the money. He decided, I'll stop fighting and just take the money, which he should have done 3 years ago. And if he did it 3 years ago, we might be playing music together.
So because he fought about... Are you done telling the story? Can I talk?
Yeah, I think that's just basically the story, yeah.
So because he wanted more money, he thought he was... I'm going to play devil's advocate and say maybe he thought, that he's... People associate dictators with Handsome Dick Manitoba. Maybe he thought he was kind of not going to get hardly any money and you guys were going to get all the money. And because he worked so hard with the dictators and is kind of like... a persona, kind of when people with the persona that people associate with the dictators. This is what I'm thinking here. And he said, well, and I really need the money. I really want to fight for this. And can't you look at it that way? And also, he's Handsome Dick Manitoba. He wears his heart on his sleeve and he's trying to support his son.
I know, but he doesn't get my royalties. He doesn't get my songwriting royalties. He doesn't get my Sound Exchange royalties. I'm not giving them out to the guy. Why should I?
All right, but
do you realize the crazy stuff that's coming out of your mouth now?
I'm coming.
Do you really think there's anybody on the planet
who
will give up their songwriting royalties to another guy because he's trying to raise his son?
All right, were these songwriting royalties or performance royalties?
Hey, you know what? If you're trying to raise your son... you don't get fired from your good paying job after you've been warned 10 times. Maybe not 10 times, but at least 3 times. I know Stephen warned them.
Well,
I saw an email.
Richard, I know. Richard is you're probably going to call me an idiot, but Richard's kind of punk rock to the core. And if somebody tells Richard Manitoba, you can't do something, he has a rebel attitude, and he says, you can't tell me not to. You tell me not to do something, it's going to make me want to do it more. He kind of has that, you know, he has a New York attitude.
Michael, come on. What are you doing? Who are you? Are you like... Is that an argument?
No, I'm not trying to start an argument. I'm trying to change your mind.
New York attitude. I'll tell you what. I'll give him a piece of my songwriting. I'll give him a piece of my Sound Exchange royalties for records that I played on that he didn't play on.
Okay, but you.
Wow. Yeah. Good idea.
But you won. You won. He eventually acquiesced and said, "Okay, let's just do this. Let's do it." And
yeah, this was in like November. And while this is going on, Ross approached me and Scott said, hey, first of all, we're talking. Hey, how do we get this money? And it was a nice chunk of money. Let me tell you.
I understand.
Would not
you guys needed the money. You guys needed the money. It was money that was coming to you. You wanted the money. I get that.
It was a lot of money. Yes. So Ross, we've been talking. Ross goes to me and Scott, hey, let's go make music. Let's go play and record as the original Dictators. Scott loved the idea. I was a little hesitant, but I said, okay, you know, and this is back in October, November. I was selling my house. I was moving upstate. So I said, I can't do anything till January. So January, we started moving forward on this project, you know, and, we're very happy.
Okay, a promoter comes to you from Europe and says, Andy, Ross, Scott, I'm going to pay you guys a lot of money, but Handsome Dick Manitoba's got to be in the band. What do you say?
Well, I don't know if anybody would do that, but I would say no. Life's too short.
What?
Let me tell you, Michael. I play music all the time. Every day I make music, it's a good day. Every day I'm playing music. I'm working with a lot of people. I'll play in a club in front of 20 people if I have a good time. That's what's most important.
What if Richard came up called you guys and apologized and said, listen, we grew up together. We went through the trenches together, which you guys did go through the trenches together. Are you, you're not laughing at me. You're coughing, right?
Yeah, I'm coughing. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't have any. Yeah. I have a slight virus in my sinuses.
Well, be careful. It could be Corona.
Yeah, no, it's not Corona. I guarantee. I know that.
So,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So what if Richard talked to you guys, came, you know, said, hey, man, hey guys, I know I've acted like, you know, I wear my heart on my sleeve. I might have come across as an asshole, and I apologize. Can't we mend fences? What would it take for you guys to talk, to at least just get together in a room and talk?
I talk to him. I'll talk to him. If he wants to apologize, I'll hear him out. Sure.
Okay. Hey, Richard, come in here. No, I'm kidding.
Your life, Andy Chernoff.
I wish I had Richard in here because he would love to apologize to you guys. I know for a fact he would.
Well, look. When he was on top, he thought he was on top of the world. He was disparaging me all over the place. I've never disparaged him in public.
Yeah, but Richard says things he doesn't mean, and you know that. You've known Richard for a long time.
I don't know. Hey, you know what? Good. You know, it doesn't matter. I'll be, you know, you want to be friends? I'll tell you one thing. I ain't making music with the guy. Life is too short for that.
Yeah, but the fans want to see.
Hey, Michael, I'm over that. I make music for myself. I make music to enjoy. And, you know, I made music. I make money. This is how I make my money. I guarantee you, I don't need Richard to make money.
Are you guys going to play gigs as the original Dictators without Handsome Dick Manitoba?
We're recording three songs right now. We're going to get them out, and then we'll evaluate. But the plan is to play shows somewhere along the line. Yeah.
Are you concerned at all that people, that Dictators fans are going to say, where's Handsome Dick Manitoba?
I think when they hear the music, they'll be saying, hey, who cares about Dick Manitoba?
Yeah, but the fun of a Dictator show, whether you agree or not, other than, you know, they're great songs, but half the fun of the Dictator shows is listening to Handsome Dick talk between songs. He is a great entertainer, and it's so fun to watch him talk between the songs and announce the songs. He's a great frontman.
Great. I don't need an announcer in my life now. I need, like, musicians. You know, that's what I like to do. You know, I agree. He's a good performer. Well, he could be good on stage.
Makes me very sad, man. I want to see you guys make up and get back together.
Hey, Michael, the guy did a lot of bad things.
He said
a lot of very bad things.
I mean, he fought for his Sound Exchange royalties. Okay, I can see how that would be bad for you.
Michael, stop. He didn't fight for his Sound Exchange royalties.
No, I know.
He tried to rip me off.
That's what I said. He tried to get as much money as he could.
He doesn't. Well, why does he go after my songwriting?
In his mind, he was not trying to rip you off.
Yes, he was trying to rip me off.
In his mind, he was trying to get as much money to support his son as he could.
Okay, well, 3 years it took to convince him that he wasn't making money for his son. Michael, slow down. He was trying to grab our royalties.
I got that.
That is serious fucking stuff.
I get that. All right, how can you legally, three guys, remove him from the Dictators corporation?
Because Richard is a great entertainer, but he's a fucking jerk. So, I'll tell you why. Michael, slow down. Slow down. When we were working on the trademark, we were working on a corporate agreement, which would have protected him from being arbitrarily kicked out of the band. When he never signed it. We sent it to him. He never signed it.
What was in this agreement?
It was a corporate agreement. How we work the corporation, which we never done before. We're trying to get things straight. It means it would give rules about how people have money distributed. And by the way, over the past 20, 30 years this corporation has existed, every year people have gotten an accounting and a K-1. So I don't know if Rich is going to come to you and say, oh, I was ripped off. He got the accounting and K-1 every fucking year. But he didn't sign. Look, you're going into these details, these minute details that are meaningless. He could have protected himself. All he had to do was sign the agreement. He didn't sign it.
So me,
Ross, and Scott are we want to play, and we say, "Oh, wow, Richard's trying to grab our sound kid. How do we protect ourselves from Richard's nonsense?" We kick him out of the group. We kick him out of the corporation, and he can't do anything so we can make music, and we don't have to worry about him, the bad guy wrestler, coming into our lives. We can just live our lives and make music. And that's what we want to do.
Shouldn't you guys, if you're going to kick a guy out of a corporation and take away any kind of livelihood, shouldn't there be some kind of a monetary settlement?
No. He gets all the money he's owed. As a matter of fact, I have a few $100s. That I will be happy to send him. But first he has to take down his Dictators websites and Facebook pages. I'll have some of the money. He's out of the corporation. He can't run his own official Dictators website, Facebook page. It's ridiculous.
So that Dictators fan, because I posted something on the Dictators fan site.
That's when we got in contact. Something else.
Right. So that's not what Richard runs.
Oh, you know what? He will get every penny he deserves. I promise you that.
I get it.
I am not blaming. Let me tell you, Michael, I've done well in this life. I have a very comfortable life. I wish everybody could have as comfortable a life as I do. If somebody tries to rip me off, I'm not going to be happy. Richard will get every penny he deserves.
So he deserves $200 to you.
No, there was, I don't remember, my accountant. We did the taxes this year, and he said, Richard has a certain amount of money that would be owed to him. It's in escrow. And I don't want to talk about, Michael, we're going to talk about my career. We're going to talk about your buddy, Manitoba.
Okay, I just got to tell you that I really like Richard Manitoba. As a person, I see he's down inside, Richard is a good guy, and he's a loyal person. I can tell there's an amount of loyalty. And he wears on his heart on his sleeve, and he can come across as the heel wrestler guy. But inside, Richard has a great heart, and I think you know that.
I've known Richard longer than you have.
Yeah. But I think I'm a pretty good judge of character. And I think Richard has a good heart. And I think inside you do too. I mean, you right now maybe don't, but
I think if you want to be friends with a guy, you can be a good friend. If you want to do business with the guy, he's not a good guy to do business with. And that's why. Slow down, Michael. That's why you brought it up. That's why little Stephen, my wife just walked in the room. Just kidding.
Hi, Mrs. Chernoff.
My wife just walked in the room. Actually, I got mad at her. But she brought me a glass with bourbon and two ice cubes. Isn't that great?
Drink up. I'll drink
up. Isn't that great? Isn't that really sweet? She heard me talking.
Hello, Mrs. Chernoff.
She left. I kicked her out of the room. Okay. Little Stephen.
I'm going to say, yeah, go ahead.
Look, Little Stephen will not talk to the guy. He won't answer an email. He won't answer a phone call. Richard caused a lot of problems at the radio station.
Well, he put a Star of David on a girl's
desk.
That's
not why he was fired, Michael.
All right, you tell me why he was fired.
He was causing problems all along. A lot of people complained to Stephen about him. Stephen sent an email, warned him a few times, stop fucking up. I have an email. I saw the email. I know everybody at the Underground Garage.
How did you get the email?
I'm not going to say it.
Okay.
But I have 8 coolest songs of the week.
I saw that on your website.
Look, they're very supportive of my career. I make money because they play my music. And Steven said, stop fucking up. The next time you fuck up, you're out. No questions asked. Capiche? He said, that was an email. You know, probably a year before he was actually fired. That was the last straw for Steven. That's why Stephen will not talk to him. He won't answer an email. He closed the fucking bar. Stephen owned the bar. Stephen owned 50% of the bar.
I know that.
He closed the bar on him. Didn't even tell him.
So little Stephen closed the bar on Richard.
Yeah.
Well, that wasn't
he
that
wanted
nice.
To sell it. He wa- Stephen wanted him to sell it. He couldn't sell it. And he gave him a long time. One day, somebody goes to the bar to, there's no money in the till or whatever. I don't know. I don't know what happened. You know, he just said, close the bar, and he forgot about it, and he moved on with his life. But he didn't tell Richard he was closing the bar. He didn't give him, hey, tomorrow we're closing the bar. Nothing. My point is,
he just pulled it out from under him, which what to me is not very nice.
I'm not saying it's nice. But he wasn't making any money, and he told Richard to sell the bar in a game a year. So, I mean, you're doing a lot of defending of Richard, but this is my point. I'm going to be very clear. You want to be friends with Richard? Probably. Yeah, he's a good friend. If you want to do business with Richard, it's a pain in the ass. And that's why we don't want to work with him in the dictators. Not because, actually, not because of the pain in the assness, because he's not a musician. He's not offering
but he's
something
an inter-
to make me excited to work with.
But he's an entertainer.
I don't care. I'm a songwriter.
Frank Sinatra didn't write songs.
He is a singer, though.
Richard
he's
can
a musician.
Sing. Richard can sing, too. He sings those songs great.
You know what? Michael, I'm tiring this.
Okay.
I don't want to defend the way I feel. I think I explained very clearly. And I'd like to talk about my career.
Okay, I just want to go on record. I want the band to get back together. And I want to be responsible for it, damn it.
Well, I'll tell you what. If Richard wants to give us a call, if he wants to apologize, if he wants to make amends publicly, I guess, you know, that's a good start. But he hasn't. Matter of fact, he's put me down. In the past few months, he's disparaged me in public many times. He disparaged me on your podcast. That's why I am here.
So you go on record as saying if Richard wants to make amends, your door is open. You're open to listen to Richard.
I listen to anybody. So I never shut him out.
If Richard calls you, you'll answer the phone.
I don't know. I don't know if I'd answer a phone call.
I don't want
him in my life. That's the whole point. My life is better with him.
You said if Richard apologized to you publicly, you will talk to him.
If Richard apologizes publicly, I will respond to an email. You got to understand, Michael, I don't want him in my life. Do you understand? I mean, I've given you years and years of him being a pain in the ass.
All right. Well, I'm begging. I'm begging you, Andy Chernoff. Get the band back together.
Okay, look.
All right, now let's talk about your music or any kind of
okay,
music.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you.
One more time. Long live Handsome Dick Manitoba. Get the dictators back together. All the guys back together. Who's playing drums, by the way? Who's from Blue Oyster Cult is doing this recording?
Albert Bouchard is playing drums.
Okay, got it. I do have a lot of questions from listeners, which I need to find.
Really?
I need to find.
Oh, great. Sure.
Let me see if I can find the thread here. Hold on a second.
Is this live on the air or something?
No, it's not live. I put out there, hey, I'm talking to Andy Chernoff, and if you have any questions.
Okay.
Somebody asked memories from working with Sandy Pearlman on your debut LP. Oh. But did he do the first record? I thought he did Manifest Destiny.
First and second. He was credited on the third. He wasn't in the studio. Sandy, you know, I have such deep feelings for Sandy, because if it wasn't for Sandy, I really feel he gave me my start in music. I've had a great life. And I really, even though it means I had problems with Sandy, a lot of people had problems with Sandy.
What kind of problems? By the way, people don't know, Sandy Pearlman managed Blue Oyster Cult, right?
Sandy Pearlman was a brilliant, brilliant person.
Did he manage Dictators too? He produced
Blue Oyster Cult. He produced The Clash. Yeah.
Got it.
He produced U2.
Got it. I thought for some reason he was a manager. But he's produced.
He manager and producer, he wrote all the lyrics for the first few, three or four Blue Oyster Cult records.
Including Agents of Fortune?
At that point, some other people, they brought other people in.
Okay.
But all these early brilliant, absolutely, the guy was fucking brilliant. His lyrics. Listen to Astronomy by Blue Oyster Cult.
Yeah. My favorite is The Agent of Fortune. I think that's a top to bottom.
It's a great record. You know, he wrote some stuff on there, I think. They started bringing other people in. Let me tell you, Sandy's the guy, when Patti Smith was working in a bookstore in New York City, said, you should be in the band. Her new book, Patti Smith's new book, she talks about Pearlman. She was on TV talking about Pearlman. They were friends. And let me tell you, Pearlman, you know, he was a visionary. He was a guy who he was not even on this planet. He spoke a different language. But he was, you know, I just owe him so much. I mentioned that his partner at the time was Murray Krugman. I owe them both. They gave me my start in the business. I've had a great career. And if, I don't know, if they weren't there, I don't know if it would have happened. I think it might have, but they gave me my start. And they supported me. They encouraged me. They gave me confidence. And I owe them the world. I'm in touch with Murray, and I've told him this.
So was there a falling out of some sort with Sandy?
Sandy can be difficult. I mean, it wasn't a falling out. I just lost touch with him.
Okay.
You know.
All right.
I mean, he had a bad end. He fell. He had a stroke, and he was brain damaged for a while. He finally died, and this was about a year or two ago. I went to his memorial in San Francisco.
Oh, his memorial was here. Huh? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Second? Did he live in San Francisco?
Yes.
Huh. Did not know that. Hey, have you, I don't know why I got this, I got in a lost, have you read Walter Lohr's new book?
It's not out yet.
So it's out now. It's because a friend of mine just got it. Yeah. So you haven't read it. Okay.
I haven't read it. I mean, Walter Lohr is a buddy. I mean, you produced
Rent Party? Did you produce Rent Party or just the new record?
I produced the new record, and I produced the Rent Party.
You did that whole record, Rent Party?
Yeah, yeah.
That's one of my favorite albums.
It's a great record. It is a great fucking, you know, I must admit, I was trying to equal the Heartbreakers, LAMF, you know?
Yeah.
LAMF is a killer record. I mean, the songs are just amazing. Rent Party is a little bit below that. And the new record's a little bit below Rent Party. But I think the new record's really good also. You know, he didn't really have the material. He's not out there playing that
much. The material on the new record, is the songs aren't quite as good. It's got the attitude, but the songs aren't as good as Rent Party. Rent Party's got the better tunes.
We took, you know, Walter's in his late 60s. He made money. He's got a very comfortable life. He likes to play. He plays with a band a few times a year.
Yeah, he does the lamp things. I saw that in San Francisco with Clint.
He calls it his Chuck Berry thing. He goes to London, and they give him money. They got a band. He goes to L.A. He goes to Florida. You know, he likes playing. Walter's a very sharp guy.
I didn't know he was comfortable with money. I didn't know he had a lot of money.
He worked on Wall Street.
Did not know that.
All that time after the Heartbreakers, after he, you know, his whole heroin addiction, even while he was on Wall Street, he was addicted to heroin. He was making money. When we were working the first making Rent Party, all these guys sitting around. Walter's in the back on the couch reading Barron's magazine. Well, the other guys are like, you know, Joey Pinter's got his gun, you know, it was kind of funny to see Walter as the businessman brain, financial brain kind of
guy. Put on a suit and went to work, huh?
Yeah, he did. He's very well read. I like Walter.
Did you ever have to get a job?
Sure.
What job did you have? I mean, after the
in my 30s, I worked. I was renting audiovisual equipment. I drove a cab. I worked in a phone bank, and then in 2005,
What kind of phone bank?
I was selling subscriptions to the New York Times.
So you called people up and tried to sell New York Times?
Yeah.
That must have been a shit job, man.
It was horrible. And the pay was horrible. But there were times I needed money. You do what you got to do. But let me tell you, I got a break. In 2005, things are starting to change in the music business. I see it. You know, there is Napster, you know, budgets are coming down. I'm not getting as many offers to produce records. And I met this guy, Jean-Luc Ledoux. He's a French guy. He loved rock and roll. He won the James Beard Award for Best Sommelier. He worked at the restaurant Danielle. Very fancy kind of.
Oh, yeah. You got in the wine business. That's right.
I got in the wine business with a guy who one of the best wines in the world were coming through his store. I did that for about 5 or 6 years.
You made a lot of money selling wine? Or
I didn't make a lot of money. I pay my bills. I bought my apartment that I just sold back then. I was able to make a living.
So what did you do? Invest in the winery?
No. We sold wine. We did retail. It was a retail store. But it wasn't, it was called what they call back room. You're calling collectors. Hey, we got this Burgundy. You got to try. You know, we got Latoche. We got, you know, Mouton Rothschild.
Right. You're not a sommelier, right?
I am a sommelier. I pass the test. I'm not a sommelier, but I pass the test.
Okay. There are several levels of sommelier. You're not any of the levels.
I'm not a master sommelier, no. I just passed the American Sommelier Association.
What does that make you? Level one?
I don't know. You know what? I have it on my wall. Let me see what it says. Hold on. It's, let's see. It says, it just says sommelier.
You like red or white?
I like both. That's a question only a non-wine drinker could ask. That's like asking, oh, you like rock and roll? Beatles or the Stones?
I'm drinking a Tecate beer right now. That tells you how much money.
I love Tecate. I love Mexican beer. I love Mexican beer.
But I do like a nice a Pinot with a bowl of, with a thing of spaghetti and meatballs. I will drink a Pinot.
Pinot Noir is my favorite grape. I love California Pinot. I love French Pinot a little more, but it's so expensive. I don't buy it.
I can't. But I actually like a Beaujolais.
Great wine.
I drink two glasses of wine and then I get drunk and sick. So that's why I stick to beer.
Beaujolais is great wine. Yeah, that's a problem, actually. My wife stopped drinking. So if I open a bottle, I got to really control myself. Have a glass or two, put it back in the fridge, you know.
How long does wine keep before it starts turning to vinegar?
Well, they have ways to keep it. I use this thing called a pump.
Right, God, yeah, right.
Rubber thing, you put pump, right. It'll last. Basically, I have a glass, put it in the fridge, have another glass or two, put it in the fridge, it'll last 3 days, and that's fine. I have a glass or two a day, and it works perfect.
So I just stick the cork back on my bottle of Beaujolais and stick it back on the counter, and it's not good the next day. Is that right?
It could be. It could be. I would recommend spend a few bucks, go to the wine store, get the pump. It's a rubber insert. And a plastic thing that pumps the air out of the bottle so the air will not oxidate the wine.
I know what that is. You know what I do? I take my leftover wine, if there is any, and I put it in a gallon jug. I have a gallon jug of red wine vinegar that is fantastic in my garage.
That's great. One of my best buddies up in here is a chef, and he's always got... He's always giving me red wine vinegar. Yeah.
All right. Okay. More questions here. All right. Somebody asked about Scott and Ross, the new project. What's the status of that? You told me already.
Mm-hmm.
production work. The figs. What album did you produce for the figs?
It's called Couldn't Get High.
Okay. I don't have that figs album. There's an album
They've made probably 20 records.
Yeah, they have an album called Badger that is fantastic.
Which one?
It's called Badger. There's a song on there called Sent Fever to Guide Me that is like one of the greatest songs.
Well, I love the Figs. I love those guys. My complaint, they make too much fucking music. They just put out a triple record.
Well, that's
it's hard to concentrate.
Yeah. Which guy? There's two guys in that band that are the songwriters, right?
Three. A matter of fact, there's Pete the drummer, Pete the bass player, and Mike the guitar player. Pete the drummer wrote the song that was in the commercial that made the big money.
Oh, that's right. What's
and there is resentment about Pete doing that because Mike.
I wonder if they had sound exchange arguments.
I don't know if it's a commercial. I don't know if it came up in Sound Exchange.
I wonder if they had royalty arguments and did it, but it didn't break up the band. See,
well, that was not broke up the band.
Okay, all right.
You
produced that first D-Generation demos
singles.
On the first
the
album,
singles.
Right?
No, the singles. Yeah, on
because they
on
put
Bill Bartel's label.
Because there was before the first album came out. Just what was the first album? Was just called D-Generation? No Way Out.
No Way Out. Yes, I forgot what label. There were on a
but
few labels.
All the songs that are on No Way Out came out first on demos because I had a cassette. You produced all those.
Yeah, I think they felt it was too raw or something, and they got a producer and they got a record company. Hey, we gotta slick this up.
Right.
You know, who cares? They paid me. You know, I actually got some money out of their deal.
You like D-Generation?
I love them. I love those guys. I just saw Jesse. Jesse played in my area. Went to see him. Great show. The guy's gotten better. You know what? He's better on his own than with D-Generation. I'll be honest. I love the guys in D-Generation. Howie Pyro, one of the best guys on the planet. You know, Danny and Michael.
What about Ricky Bacus?
Ricky. I haven't seen Ricky in a while. He's down in North Carolina.
He wrote the best D-Generation song of all time, Capital Offender.
He also wrote the riff in No Way Out. Ricky, they're all great guys. I love them. I'm happy for Jesse's success. You know, but you know, Howie played with Danzig for years. Howie's played with a lot of people. So Howie's been a pretty big success. So he's a big DJ now. He's done quite well.
What else do I have? Oh, let me see. Somebody asked about a Rush tour. Let me look for this.
Okay. You guys, I'll tell you. I know the story.
You opened for Rush in Atlanta for 6 nights in 1974. You guys threw hamburgers at the audience and got booed off the stage, then fired from the tour?
That's a little exaggerated. We had 4 shows in Atlanta. This is before our record was out. We are pure attitude punk rock, you know, wise guys.
But you were signed. You got the deal was already done. Recorded already.
I assume we probably had a deal because that was probably booked through the booking agency, and I'm sure they went to book us unless we had a deal. So, but the record was not out. The record came out in March of 75. So this is 74, I guess. Sandy Murray said, let's get these guys on the road. Let's get them.
Yeah, kind of hard for
let's
a
get
punk
them
rock
more
band.
Experience. But you know what? There was no place to play. There was no punk rock circuit. There was no... We're opening for Rush. That's what they could get us. We opened for Billy Preston. We opened for all these crazy people because there was no Ramones. There was no Sex Pistols.
Right. Yeah, you guys.
There was no
punk rock
circuit.
You guys were punk
of
rock
clubs.
Pioneers.
We were pioneers. Yes, we were.
So how? So tell me about it. You threw hamburgers and got booed off the stage.
I don't remember throwing hamburgers. We might have.
I can see how you get booed off the stage for Rush. That's not a good. The Runaways had similar deals. They opened for Rush too, and the same thing happened with them. But why? So tell me more about touring with the 6 shows or 4 shows with Rush.
You know, it was Atlanta. It was like
was that a club? Was it
we
theater?
Drove down. It was a club. Alex Cooley's Electric Ballroom.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. You know, we didn't know. You know, I never met a band before. The Dictator's my first band. I never, the only guy who had any, we formed the band, the only guy who knew how to play was Ross. Me and Scott didn't know how to play at the time. You know, we had an array of drummers who were some okay, fucked up, you know. It was, you know, we were kids.
Richard was in the band too, though. Handsome Dick Manteau was also at that.
I think so. You know, I don't remember exactly what was going on.
I would imagine if you guys were getting booed opening for Rush, Handsome Dick Manteau would have either put down Rush or put down the people in the audience, or both.
Well, we would have been booed no matter what.
Do you remember when? You guys played because Richard told me this on when I had him on about with Kiss when he imitated Paul Stanley and you guys got thrown off the tour.
We didn't get thrown off the tour. This is what this is people saying. We had a short stint of 6 or 8 dates. We did all the dates
with Kiss.
Yeah, yeah. We didn't get thrown off the tour. Okay. No.
All right.
We did a few shows. Again, Cheap Trick was in the middle of the bill a lot of times. You know, people didn't know how to deal with us. We didn't know how to.
Rush, Cheap Trick, and the Dictators. That's a good
name. No. Kiss.
Oh, Kiss, Cheap Trick. And
the Dictators. Yeah. In the Midwest, before people knew who the Ramones were, there was no Sex Pistols. CBGBs was just getting rolling. There was no cultural movement about what the kind of music we're playing. You know, now Green Day and Clash and Offspring had huge records, but it didn't. At the time, it was Journey and REO Speedwagon. Right. And,
yeah.
You know, so it was a difficult road for us.
All three of those albums, what was the label? Was it Epic?
First album was Epic. Second or third was Elektra.
Okay. What's the favorite?
After that, I maintained the ownership of all the records. As a matter of fact, I got back the ownership of Blood Brothers. You know, I'm concluding all that, but we now can collect some money from those records.
And Wild Kingdom, what label is that on?
That was MCA.
MCA, okay. But you took... Now, were you getting along with Richard during all that time? Because you took Richard, and you basically took everybody with the Dictators, except for Scott, right? To Wild Kingdom?
Scott was in the Delawares at the time.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, we had a manager who said, why don't you call the Dictators? And I said, I don't know. Scott's not in the band, you know?
Thunderbolt Patterson came...
Longer. He was in the band.
You get along with him?
Yeah.
All right.
Good drummer. Very good drummer.
Okay, all right. All right, somebody said, any master plans material yet to be released? What's master plans?
That's a band I had with Keith Strang from the Fleshtones who made two records. We did 3 tours of Europe. We had a few coolest songs of the week on Little Stevens Underground Garage.
The question is, are there any master plans material that's not released? That was the question.
No. Keith is living in Sweden now. He's got the Fleshtones. He plays with one or two other bands. You know, it's again, this is a band where everybody's living in different parts of the country. It's really... You can't just get together and say, hey, let's rehearse and work up. It just got unwieldy, you know, even though I think we made some good music. I love the band. My girlfriend loves the band better, more than the Dictators. Can you edit that out? So
she's not going to listen to her. She'll be bored by the time it gets this far. After she hears me begging you to have Richard back in the band, she'll probably turn it off. So
she's gonna. Yeah, she probably will, actually.
Does she like Richard? Has she ever met
Richard?
She's
never met him. No, she doesn't like him because she's protective. She's protective. And, you know, she's a sweetheart.
I'm going to say this again. Deep down, Richard loves you, man. He loves you and he loves Ross. I know he does.
Does he love Scott?
He loves Scott too, but Scott got mad because he said he didn't like the Delawares music, and he thought that was a really kind of childish thing for Scott to get so bent out of shape about saying he didn't like the Delawares.
Okay, what Richard is doing now is, what's the word? Damn it, there's a word.
Damage control?
He's changing history.
All right. So why does Richard not go with Scott?
You know what? I can show you stuff. The nastiest things in the world he said about me, he said about... You know, he still got it on his website. Go to his website.
A lot of that, though, is defense. Not even defense.
Defense?
I take that back. I take that back.
I got to stop you that, there. I have never attacked him
I got
in
that. I misspoke.
Until today.
I misspoke. A lot of that is... I guess the word would be posturing. to cover up for insecurities, maybe.
Hey, I don't know. You know, look, he's a guy from the Bronx.
Are you from the Bronx?
I can't help. You know, I mean, you can't. You know, there's a reason. There's a reason why he's insecure about.
Are you also from the Bronx?
No, I'm from Queens.
Okay,
I went to elementary school with Johnny Thunders. I'm from Queens. Is Queens the borough of Rock?
Is there a problem between Queens people and Bronx people?
No, no. Just Queens is the borough of Rock. The Dolls are from Queens. The Ramones are from Queens. You know, Friends of Television. Well, okay. Leslie West. So maybe I can name a million people.
That's just the Bronx boy, you know, posturing, tough guy posture, playground talk. Yeah, that's playground talk. That's what, you know, how the guys in the tough guy talk in the playground back in the 60s and 70s would talk like tough guys. But deep down, they had a good heart, and they'd give their life for you.
Michael, I'm 66 years old. Don't tell me about the fucking playground.
I'm just telling you
that this guy's still on the playground. He can stay there. Really, I'm an adult.
All right, please get rich. Please make.
I'm more than an adult.
Please make up with Richard.
Hey. It's up to him, you know. He's got a lot.
You know that I'm. You know that I got to tell you. You know that Richard's probably going to come back on and talk after this too. I do not want this to be like a Jerry Springer bullshit. He said, she said stuff. All I want to do is get the fucking dictators back together, man.
Okay, number one, that's not going to happen because it's about the music. And Richard cannot contribute musically. That's just a fucking fact.
Have you heard Richard's solo? Have you heard Richard's solo album? Did you listen to it?
I little bits here and there.
You don't like it?
It's not my thing. You know, good luck. You know, first of all, why are you making an album in 2020?
Well, he's got to do what he's got to do.
Okay, he could do it, but it's a stupid idea. That's what I'm saying.
Lots of people make albums in 2020.
Look, if you want to sell an album in 2020, you got to be on tour.
But lots
or you got to be a major artist. Otherwise, you're wasting your time.
Yeah, but lots of people put out records still. They might be wasting their time.
I'm saying it's a waste of time. What do you sell? 200, 300 copies? Yeah, I mean, really.
But don't you think that is admirable that Richard put out an album?
Michael.
Wait.
He should have done it 30 years ago.
I know. You do not.
He puts out his first album when he's 65 years old.
Well, you wrote all the songs. You wrote all the great songs. He didn't have to write songs. He had the greatest songwriter in punk rock, right?
Other than Dee Dee Ramone.
Dee Dee Ramone were the greatest songwriters ever in punk rock, and it's a known fact.
I will not dispute that. But
why does he need to write songs? He's the greatest songwriter in punk rock.
Michael, you're wearing
Dee Dee Ramone and Daniel Ray. Three guys wrote great tunes.
No, Joe Ramone was better than Daniel.
Okay.
Daniel wrote a few things with Ramone that were good. I worked with Dee Dee. I recorded with him. I wrote songs with him. The guy was brilliant. Absolutely.
He was a genius. Idiot savant.
He's an idiot savant. Exactly. In the Ramones, he's a fucking genius. Is there a better song than Rockaway Beach on the planet? A better rock and roll song than Rockaway Beach? The answer is no. There are songs that equal it, but there is not a better rock and roll song than Rockaway Beach. He wrote that.
You will have no disagreement from me. You and Dee Dee Ramone, the greatest songwriters in punk rock. There's no doubt about that.
Well, okay, now listen.
But I'll tell you this,
slow down, one second. If Rich is working with the greatest songwriter in the world, you better make that show some respect to that songwriter.
Okay.
I do not feel respected, and you got to work hard.
Do you really feel like I'm not respecting you? I'm showing you disrespect.
No, I'm saying Richard didn't respect me. That's why
Richard doesn't.
I don't work with him.
Richard
doesn't. And I'm not going to work with him. Richard. I guarantee you, Michael. I guarantee you. If he calls me up and says, Andy, I'm sorry. I'm trying to steal your money. I'm sorry for trying to steal the trademark for the kids. I'm sorry for calling your names. I'm not going to work with him because I don't have that many years left on the planet.
I'm telling you this.
I'm going to work with musicians who I enjoy working with. I'm not going to work with a guy because I got to help him pay, take care of his son.
Richard does respect you. I'm telling you, he respects you.
Hey, I will show you many things he said that we showed.
Yeah, people say things. People say things they don't mean.
He said it over and over and over and over.
I kind of think in a way.
And over.
I kind of think in a way that Richard has the kind of. The
not that I really took it personally. You know, that I really was. Oh, I cared. So what's this idiot doing?
I kind of think in a way Dee Dee and Richard have a little bit of the same personality.
Well, you know what? It could be. You know, Dee Dee Ramone was mentally ill. He had a bad case of schizophrenia. I knew Dee Dee reasonably well. And one day he's your best friend. And the next day he hates you. Richard has some, look, he's a mental disorder. I don't know what it is. I'm not a psychiatrist. If you want to be his friend, and I've told this to other friends. You know, you brought it up. I've discussed this with mutual friends of me and Richard. Get the guy help. The guy needs help. And they go, oh, no, I can't talk to him. People don't want to deal with him. But the guy needs help. You know, just read the newspaper. Look at his Facebook thread.
Look
at the threads. There are threads on Facebook of hundreds of people going, this guy's an asshole.
In defense of Richard, Richard got in that stuff with his wife. He got custody of his son. So that should tell you a lot about how that went down.
Look, I'm not defending his wife. I'm saying, why are you with a woman who's got a boyfriend on the West Coast and is having sex with the guys in the East Village? Why are you still with her? What's with you?
Well, that's between Richard and her.
I agree. But that's going to cause a problem.
Okay. I can't talk you into getting back with Richard. I tried. I did my best. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Dictators fans. I did my best to get the band back together.
Michael,
it's it is like Israel and Palestine.
No, it's not. Not at all. I don't need Richard in my life. I'm going to move on with my life without Richard. And I appreciate your fans of the band, but you know I'm a musician. I make music.
Are you financially set?
Yes, I am.
From wine, or
no?
Or you
no,
got
no?
You got your mom died, and you got money.
No, I made money. Yeah, I made money, Michael. I made a lot of money.
Okay, all right.
I invested in a business that's now worth $70 million.
Is that the winery?
No, it's not.
What is the business? What business did you invest in that made
$7 million? I'm not gonna talk about my business to you on the podcast.
All right.
But I just sold.
Brought it up.
I bought an apartment. I bought an apartment 20 years ago in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, that I just sold for a lot of money. And let me tell you, you know, people are freaking out about money now. You know what I'm doing? I'm starting to put money back in. I made a lot of money. Stock market. I flipped houses. I've done a million things.
Did Walter Lohr sell you any stock?
No, he didn't. He was in the back room. He wasn't a salesman. He was in the back room working the trades. He wasn't exactly a guy who made a commission on selling
stock. I'm just fascinated that Walter Lohr was in the stock market.
It's pretty well known, you know. Huh. Pretty well known if you do a little research.
Yeah, well, I'm reading his set. Book. I got
he's
his
very
book
well
on
set.
Order.
He owns his home. He's got a nice home in Bayside, New York. You know, he travels. He lives a life he wants to live, which is what people at our age should do. We shouldn't be worrying about money. I'm lucky. I don't have to. I feel bad for the people I know who are working in New York who are having a lot of problems right now. We're talking in the middle of the whole coronavirus.
How's Ross doing financially?
Seems to be okay. I haven't discussed, but he's got a business.
What's his
wife?
What is his business?
Batting cage.
Huh. Batting cages?
Yeah.
Wow. Unbelievable. Are you a baseball
player? His son is a good baseball player. And he noticed, him and his wife had noticed that, hey, these teams don't have a place to play to practice their swing in the winter. So they made a batting cage.
Indoor batting cages?
Yes.
You a baseball fan too?
Not anymore. When I was a kid, I was.
Yankee fan or Mets fan?
Mets fan and Dodger fan.
Ah, no wonder you don't get along with Rick.
Right. I grew up near Shea Stadium. When I was a kid, I used to ride my bike to Shea Stadium when they were building it.
Well, I'm a Giant. I'm a San Francisco Giants fan. So we hate the Dodgers over here. So
yeah, it's great. You know what? I can't get a passion up for sports anymore. I like playing sports. I always played sports. You know, when I was a kid, I played basketball every single day after school. I went to the basketball court and played basketball. I love sports. I love playing sports. But, you know, I know the professional sports, these guys making billions of dollars and switching teams. I lost interest over the years.
Yeah. Yeah. You okay with Richard selling his memorabilia and stuff for money?
I couldn't give a shit. You know, I mean, it's sad that he has to do it. I sold my memorabilia, you know, in one big chunk. Not all of it. I sold my extra stuff I didn't want. You know, I lived off that for 1 year.
Oh, another question from somebody. There's a bill. I think this is on your website. This flyer, Dictators headlining at the Palladium. Special guest Michael Stanley Band and AC/DC opening, $3.50.
Yeah.
77? Is that when that was?
77, I believe.
That would be AC/DC's first U.S. tour, I think.
That was AC/DC's first show in New York City. We had opened up for them in Ohio at a few dates. I had never heard of them. And they played, and they were great. I was knocked out. This is around the Powerage. I'm sure. How do you pronounce what's that album?
No, that was
Powerage or Powerage.
77, is that Powerage? Powerage?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. How do you pronounce that record? I don't know.
I call it Powerage. I don't know. That's not their first U.S. tour. That would be their second U.S. tour. The first U.S. tour was Let There Be Rock.
Right. Okay. But that was the first time. We had played with them a few times. We got along great with them. Those guys were right up our alley. A matter of fact, they'd asked us to do a European tour, and we went to Elektra, asked for tour support, and that's when we got dropped. When we wanted to, they said, we're not selling records. We're not going to give you more tour support to go tour with AC/DC. But
what about the Michael Stanley Band? That's kind of a different, three bands are totally different.
I don't know. I think we had been to Europe just before that or something.
Well, that was a Ron Delsner show. Huh?
Ron Delsner ran the Palladium. Delsner. Actually, Ron Delsner was into wine. I used to sell wine to Ron Delsner.
One more question from the thing. All right. There was a bill, Blue Oyster Cult, Thin Lizzy, and the Dictators opening, but you guys didn't show up at the Palladium. You guys were a no-show, according to this.
I don't know about that, but I could give you, there were shows, AC/DC, Thin Lizzy, and the Dictators.
Well, this particular one was September 29th, 30th, and October 1st. The bill was Blue Oyster Cult, Thin Lizzy, and the Dictators.
I don't remember. Okay. But we played with Thin Lizzy a bunch of times.
Any memories of that? Of those?
Yeah,
that's a different bill. That's a different. You know, that's kind of a strange pairing too.
Yeah, but it was
back then. All kinds of bands were paired.
It wasn't strange back then at all.
Yeah,
not at all.
That sounds like a great bill.
Let me tell you, Michael. I used to go to the Fillmore East. I saw Miles Davis opening up for Neil Young, and the headliner was Steve Miller. No, Steve Miller was the middle bill. Headliner was Neil Young. I was in the first row. I saw Miles Davis playing when I was a kid at the Fillmore East.
Yeah, I grew up in the 70s. There were all kinds of bands. It was all rock and roll back then. All bands were put together.
Mm.
Except for Rush. You get booed off stage if you went for Rush.
Hey, you know what? One of our roadies went to work for Rush, which is kind of funny.
I bet he's glad
he did. I think he worked with him till Neil Peart died, which is, of course, very tragic.
The entire time, then.
Yeah, I think he worked for the whole time he did the keyboard setup.
Well, Andy Chernoff, thank you for telling your story. Anything else you'd like to talk about?
No, thank you for letting me tell my story. You know, I know there was two issues of getting it out, and you want to have Richard on, let him tell his story.
You got to just remember.
Refer back to this. I told my story. I'm not even going to talk about my episode with Richard in public anymore. I promise you. Well, I can't say that because I'm doing a lot of interviews lately. People know dictators are recording. I'm doing three interviews. I have one more. I have to finish.
Have you told everybody that Richard's not doing this with you guys?
If they ask, I don't
know. Have they asked?
Yes. Yes. I guess people saw Ross's posting on Facebook. So I guess people are. That's why I don't do that many interviews. For me to do four interviews in the space of 6 weeks is a lot. I don't do that many interviews usually. Well, so I guess people are picking up something's happening.
Well, I hope I didn't come across as an asshole. You just got to keep in mind, I'm a fan. Number one, I'm a fan. Number two, I love your songwriting. And number three, I think Richard's a great person. And number four, I want you guys to get back together.
Well, I appreciate that, Michael. I appreciate. You know what? I think it's great. You're supporting Richard. But
it's not even that I'm supporting Richard. I'm supporting all the Dictators fans worldwide.
I'll tell you what, Richard. Richard, Michael.
Yeah, okay, now, Andy, that's a good. Tell Richard right now what you would like to say to him, if you could say to.
I have nothing to say to him. I'm nothing.
A gun is held to your head right now.
No,
your wife is threatening to divorce you.
My life is better with him out of my life.
Say something nice to Richard. Your wife is asking you to.
My wife may not say that, but nice to Richard. Hey, Richard. No, get your shit together.
That's not nice. You say something nice.
Richard, you know, you had your opportunity.
Come on. Say something nice. Richard. Richard, this is Andy Chernoff. Come back to the band.
No way.
Richard, I love
Michael, you. Michael, look, Michael, I wish Richard has a happy life. Okay. But I'm happier with him not in my life. That's the unfortunate truth. I'm being honest with
all
you.
Right. Well, that makes
I am happier if he's not near me.
It makes me sad.
I understand that. I know people put project about
You guys were magic on stage together. All of you, Ross and Richard were magic on stage together.
Well, Richard should have appreciated it because I have other opportunities. Richard does not have other opportunities to play. Nobody will play with Richard.
Well, that's not true.
He's the lead singer. Why can't you get a band? Go get a band together. He didn't.
Okay. Yeah. Richard, if you're listening to this, Andy Chernoff loves you.
I love
you,
Richard.
He just won't admit it. He just won't admit it.
Look, I wish Richard. I don't want bad things to happen to Richard. I really. Go form a band. Go be a success. I don't care. I don't care. Okay. My point is, I am happier if this guy is not near me. Go form a band. If you're dependent on me and my songs, then you better have a different attitude than you've been projecting over the past 10 years.
All right. Well, expect a call from Richard, I hope, because I'm going to try to talk Richard into calling.
Okay, we'll see. We'll see. Right. But, Michael, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
And this was a great talk. I love talking to you.
I don't want to be disparaging to anybody. My life is great. I want everybody to be happy. But I make music, and every day I make music is a good day. And
how many songs do you write in a month?
I don't write that much. You know what I've been doing lately? I've been playing bass with a few people in my area. And I just like playing bass, you know. That's one reason when Ross came and he said, hey, let's do Dictators. I said, okay, well, then I guess I'm going to have to come up with some material.
So the three songs, describe the three songs. And what are the titles of the three songs?
I don't know. People, we talked enough. I'm getting tired.
You don't know the titles of the three songs?
I do know the song titles.
You don't want to tell me.
I've bored you
for an hour and a half. Okay.
We talked over an hour.
Okay.
I think I gave you an interview that people can talk about.
All right. Dictators fans, Andy Chernoff refuses to tell you the titles of the three new songs.
They'll know. They'll find out.
Okay.
And I think they're going to like them. You know what? I think, you know.
You're singing lead on them?
I'm singing lead on these songs. Yes. Okay. I have some help. You know, it's so early. It's very, very early. You know, understand. Everybody's in a different place. Scott's in California. I'm upstate New York. Ross is in New York. I put down some tracks. Albert played some drums for me. Digital drums. We're going to have to replace this. Oh. Ross is sending me tape. It's a whole slow process.
Right. You're doing this like over online. You're like sending each other tracks.
It's not the way I want to do it. Right. I want to get together in a room for 2 or 3 days.
Right.
Hash out the songs and then go record them.
So the Dictators is a long way away from release, probably.
I would think so, yes.
Okay, all right. Well, Andy Chernoff, I respect your songwriting. I think, like I said, I think you and Dee Dee Ramone, greatest punk. It's not even it's a fact. You guys are the greatest punk writer, the two greatest punk rock songwriters of all time.
Well, I think Dee Dee Ramone is a genius. I think he is maybe the greatest punk rock songwriter. So thank you. I appreciate that. It's very kind of you to say that.
All right, Andy. Thank you for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Okay, Michael.
All right.
Thank you very much. Okay. Bye-bye.
Talk to you later. Bye. There you go, friends. I tried my best to get the Dictators back together. Could happen. You know, people have a lot of pride, and we'll see what happens. I'm Team Handsome Dick Manitoba. I love Richard Manitoba, and I also love Andy Chernoff's songwriting. So I just wish, at our age, why can't we love each other? Yes, I am being a hippie. All right, let's close out with a song by Andy Chernoff. I'm not sure if this is released or not. This song is called My Imaginary Friend. Thank you for listening. Be safe out there. Hopefully this bullshit ends really soon because I am losing my mind. Be nice to your neighbors. If you got an old lady who lives down the street from you, bring her a bowl of soup. Wear gloves and a mask if you need to. Hug your wife, hug your husband, hug your kids, and pray that this shit ends soon. I'm heading to the mountains. Here is Andy Chernoff, My Imaginary Friend. I'll talk to you soon.
She's a sensation, a divine flirtation.
My imaginary friend.
I'm a believer, with Sven got a fever for. Guitar, she plays it loud. When I'm with her, I feel so proud. I go, she's a 9/11 truther, a Lyndon LaRouche. The militia, she's quoting from scripture. She says the masses are so hypnotized. That's how I feel when I look in her eyes. I go.
It's a rock and roll geek train wreck.